B-I-L-L, Smith, S-M-I-T-H. Thank you. And for the recording record, this is the board with the non-commercial stakeholder group, 15:30 on Tuesday.
Welcome, everybody. This is the board engaging, listening, and at the service of the non-commercial stakeholders groups. We have three, is that right, separate constituencies represented. I'm going to turn the floor to Avery. As we have been doing regularly, the agenda is determined by you, and we'll ready to engage. Go ahead.
Thank you. My name's Avery Doria. I'm sitting in for Robin Gross, who couldn't make the trip this time. She's the chair of the NCSG. NCSG is composed of two constituencies, MPOC and NCUC. We submitted a few questions, but then we're going to try and reorder the questions because of a conversation we just had. On the first question, though, that we had, preserving ICANN's commitment to the bottom-up community-led model for internet governance, after a bit of discussion in our policy committee and in our other meeting, we decided that it wasn't really worth asking that question. We felt that it wasn't specific enough, and we felt that it was too easy to answer, that the board would say, but of course we're committed to the bottom-up community-level model for internet governance. Next. So we've decided not to ask you that question, and I hope that's okay.
Next.
As I said, if you could go, though, to the next slide. Well, the first question we wanted to ask had to do with GNSO review and restructuring, and yes, GNSO review and restructuring, clarification of board's direction so as to align near-term efforts of stakeholder groups and constituencies. And Wolfgang Kleinwachter was going to give us the lead-in and then open it up to further comments, questions, and hopefully comments from the board in response.
Wolfgang Kleinwächter, thank you, Avery. And it's great that we continue this interaction between the non-commercial stakeholder group and the board. Issues which were discussed under this issue were primarily, you know, what will be the consequences for the non-commercial stakeholder groups if a lot of new commercial partners join the GNSO supporting organizations and form their own constituencies, and you know how we can find ways, strategies, and policies to keep the balance between the commercial and the non-commercial groups in the right way so that the interests of the non-commercial stakeholder group remain adequately reflected in the whole structure. We have seen a number of proposals which are not yet, to my knowledge, not officially, to establish new registries in the contracting house. The Brent groups wants to have probably a registry. The GEOs want to have an own registry. And our question is, you know, how do you anticipate, you know, what's going on? And do we have any plans, policies, or ideas how you want to react to this? Thank you.
Thank you. Did anyone from NCSG wish to add anything to that introductory question? And in lieu of that, did anyone? Yes, Bill.
Thank you. I don't actually remember exactly where the wording of these questions came from. But there is the point about aligning near-term efforts I'd just like to speak to. We have, in NCUC, we have been putting a lot of time and effort since our last election, since December, into sort of trying to do a little organizational rebirthing and enhancement and building up our institutional capacity in a number of ways that I won't bore you with the details, but an enormous amount of time and effort has been spent by volunteers in trying to strengthen the constituency and prepare it to move forward more effectively. Now the next big task that we're looking at is the question of our bylaws, which are a bit dated and don't really correspond well to what how we really function. And so in thinking about how and whether to embark on this and put a lot of time and effort into this, one thing that comes to our mind is, well, What exactly is the board thinking, though, about the future evolution of the stakeholder group and the larger structures that we're part of? Because it certainly wouldn't make a lot of sense for us to put a lot of time into rewriting bylaws if, in fact, some larger restructuring that would affect the constituency status were to take place. And we've been told of conversations with board members who have speculated about larger structural changes. And some of us would support that. I mean, if those who were here back in the days of Seoul will remember that in the early charter, in the process of developing the charter for NCSG, many people in NCUC were for having an integrated stakeholder group and abolishing constituencies and just having interest groups, because we thought we were going to spend way too much time on tending to sandboxes, which indeed has happened. But so if there's the possibility of some kind of change that could impact us, it would really help us to know that so that we don't go off and spend enormous amounts of time trying to build up something that would, may go away or be changed from above. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. I think part of that comes out of we noticed with a certain amount of jealousy that it looked like the registrars with their new interest groups were actually getting to do some of the things that we had tried to do but been rejected on. So I think part of the question comes out of that as well. So we're wondering is whether it's Ray or someone else could possibly talk to us to this topic.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
The answer to your question is yes, I could talk to it.
You have to ask him again.
So, first of all, if you recall last year, the Structural Improvements Committee, in an effort initiative that was led by Bertrand, started down the road of exploring the impact of new GTLDs on ICANN structures, in particular the structure of GNSO. And I'll leave it to Bertrand to expand on that, and I won't go into that any further at this point. With regards to other things, yes, I agree with what you just said about special interest groups and so forth. The problem that existed is, and you probably could have got away with this too, and is that there was no process in place for anybody to amend their charters, only to establish a charter. So the decision that was made, whether or not it was the best decision or the correct decision, but the decision was, okay, we will approve this one amendment to this charter. However, if you will notice, there has also been posted for comment a stakeholder group charter amendment procedure. And I believe the comment period is open until sometime towards the end of August. And so I really would welcome your comments and input on that. With regard to what's going to happen with the future of ICANN, one of the, as was mentioned yesterday in the session on strategic planning that occurred right after the opening ceremony before I cleared the room, the board went through a similar type exercise for a day and a half, 2 days in Amsterdam during May. And a lot of the things that came up in discussion as far as looking at different impacts and so forth really boiled around to the GNSO and the problem that is being raised here with regard to all these new things happening, which is the same thing that Bertrand brought up. And so my short answer is yes, it has to change. A little bit longer is the constituency model as currently working is unworkable in the future for a number of reasons. It doesn't mean it has to go away. It just means that we have to fit structures that recognize that there can more than likely be lots of constituencies. And so we have to figure out how we're going to accommodate that into the structure, and not only to the structure, but also to the processes. Most importantly, the process of making policy and the process of governance. And so I think that the results of the and this is where your input into the strategic planning process is valuable. You know, I hate to say that we have to have these inputs here and there and so forth, but my experience is the more time you spend on planning, the easier it is to execute, and the less time you have to spend on trying to fix what you didn't think through in the first place. So, yes, we're going to have a serious look at things, and, yes, it's going to take some time. And, yes, it takes longer than we would like because it's a volunteer organization we're dealing with. It's not somebody we can corner and say, okay, guys, do it. So there's a lot of factors here, and I know I'm preaching to the choir to a great deal here. All I can say is that the board can't do this alone. And as far as the Structural Improvements Committee is concerned, we are not going to do this alone. And we intend to figure out ways of bringing people in. I know that you can see the effort from what Denise started with yesterday morning in the strategic planning process moving forward, that the community is not being left out of that process either. So it's really a matter of participating, and it's really a matter of going beyond where things are right now and thinking about realistically where is ICANN going to be in 5 years? What do you want the structure to look like? Do you want to have, as we suggested before, about just a broad-based stakeholder group without constituencies or any kind of different types of arrangements? We need to have that really, thought process is going on to go beyond and go beyond to a certain extent, the smaller interest and go to the broader interest, because in the end we know where we want to be. It's just that we have to make sure we get there. So the other day in the GNSO Council there was a discussion going on about amending the bylaws to do a particular thing, and I made the statement that whole piece of the bylaws that pertains to the GNSO doesn't belong in the ICANN bylaws. It belongs someplace else. There needs to be reference in the ICANN bylaws to the GNSO and some things about it, but not how the GNSO goes about its business and so forth. And so I think we need to have really that kind of thinking to go forward. In my mind, I can easily think of a number of different ways that the structure could look in 3 to 5 years. And I know that if I was to spend any amount of time on them, that I could easily break one apart or break another one apart. But it takes more than just a few people thinking. It takes more people to discuss it. And what we really need to do is be able to frame the proper discussion topics and get them into the proper forums so we can get meaningful dialogue and get something done. I hope that's not too much of a wishy-washy answer, but the thing is that I can't predict the future. If I could, I wouldn't be sitting here. I'd be sitting on an island someplace with a drink with a little umbrella in it, relaxing, because I'd have millions and millions of dollars. So the only thing I can ask for is your cooperation and help in getting this thing done. I'll defer a little bit, if you wish, to Bertrand to talk a little bit more about the impact of new GTLDs on structures.
Okay. Thank you. And certainly I would never accuse anybody of being wishy-washy, at least, yeah. Actually, I would. But I wanted to bring in one extra element to it and then pass it off to Bertrand. Is I think it's all well and good to be looking at the 3 to 5 year projection. But, for example, there are some issues with this constituency model, et cetera, right now. For example, the letter that we just sent to the board about, we went through a lot of effort to create a new constituency. You and I spent a lot of time talking about the birth of this new constituency. It's existed for 2 years now, and yet we can't get it a seat on NomCom like every other constituency in the GNSO. So 5 years is a good timetable for the future, but we do have current concerns, and so passing it off to Bertrand.
Let me respond very quickly, Bertrand. I hear you. I fully understand you, and yes, we're in one of those situations where we've got to take care of the alligators while we try to figure out how to drain a swamp. And so there are a number of different ways that we can approach that, and I don't know exactly what the best way is to do that, because I really am opposed at this point to doing too much tinkering with a bunch of different organizations and so forth. And so I really can't give you a better answer than that right now.
Bertrand, please.
Yeah, thank you. Just to follow up on what Ray's is saying, clearly the topic of the evolution and the structural evolution of the organization is growing at the moment. And some of the discussions that took place early on in Toronto and afterwards show that there is a tension, or at least a discussion, regarding, one, the scalability of the constituency-based model, as Bill has mentioned, and second, the evolution and the functioning of the workflow of the policy development process in general. And there were very interesting discussions in the last few days regarding the perceptions of whether the model functions or doesn't function, and the discussion is growing. At this stage, the key question is, there is no particular vision on the board of how the evolution of the organization should be. Our main concern is that the discussion takes place. And in this regard, beyond the initiation of topics that have been made earlier on, and particularly the things that the Structural Improvement Committee has triggered and the reaction that it has gotten from the different groups, one thing that is clear is that one of the committees that Fadi Shahadi has announced on Monday, the panels that he has the intention to form, and particularly the one that will be led by Beth Simon Novak, is likely to address the evolution of the multi-stakeholder model, and in particular how we framed it, the how we structured, how we evolve, and how it functions. This means that there will be an important discussion in the community, and it's not only it's going to be feeding into the strategic plan thing, but it is something that will go faster, i.e., in terms of discussion, those panels are going to last about a year. So the key question is how the discussion around those panels are going to be organized. In that regard, it will be extremely important both for the board and for the panels themselves to see how they want to conduct the discussion with the community, because it's essential that the input and the discussion is being made by the community and not only by a five or six-person panel. In that regard, the question that is asked, which is near-term efforts and long-term perspectives, it is clear that it's probably less in the context of the NCSG and more in the context of the contracted party house that part of the restructuring is going to take place in terms of forming new interest groups, forming observatory groups, and so on. However, the question you raise is a very interesting one regarding the balance between the different structures. The current structure of the GNSO is based on this balancing structurally of the two houses. However, if there is a huge number of actors in one side and not more actors on the other side, it may have an optical challenge in that regard. The point of the natural consequence of the creation of a new constituency regarding the presence in the NOMCOM is something that, as Ray said, is under discussion at the moment, and it's a little bit of a struggle. We had envisaged to develop a faster sort of partial NOMCOM review to make a rule about this, and it looked strange to launch another type of review in a separate bucket if the rest of the structure is likely to evolve. So one of the main challenges to finish is that the ICANN model of review has functioned on a structure by structure. And in many cases, it was difficult to change things in one structure because it would have impact on another one. We have reached, I think, a moment, or at least I sense that there's this growing understanding that we have reached a moment where the creation of the new GTLD program is actually bringing back on ICANN an obligation to adapt to the new environment that it creates. And I think the period that is opening up now, precisely with this panel and the discussions that will go around is the right moment to ask and to participate in those discussions.
Thank you. Yes, please.
Every would probably help to understand a little bit what you had in mind yourselves, because I don't think the board has a direction, that individual board members and a committee of the board's thought it through a little bit, but there's certainly no board position on this. What sort of near-term efforts were you thinking of? You know, that might help to understand a little bit, but I might preface it a little bit by saying some of the discussions we have been having in the board are around silos and the perception that, you know, we're getting a lot of silos in ICANN, and it's that the effect of that is that each silo gives its report to the board and asks the board to sort out the differences between the silos. And I'm keen to understand whether one of the big reforms or supposed reforms, because I think it already existed anyway, was creating working groups or more use of working groups in the GNSO. And I'm just wondering if that's working and how we can help make that more effective. But anyway, interested in what changes you had in mind.
I'm not sure when indeed I should give you the changes I had in mind or we had in mind, but I don't know if it's time now because we had four other items. But I also know...
It's tough being in charge, isn't it?
Not really. I did have Erica. I did want to point out, though, in terms of the near term, one of the things that I would say is that we have to sort of stabilize and make fair the current situation while we're talking about the long-term situation. And that's the point I made about the MPOC and NOMCOM. I think in terms of working groups, yes. They do appear to be working. We do appear, but we have to. We had a conversation with GAC this morning in NCUC where we pointed out that, you know, you have junior folks in your ministries. Why aren't they participating in our working groups? So, and those are the paths that I would take. But that's a longer conversation that I'd love to engage with you because, you know, I've got an amazing number of ideas, as do the rest of the members of NCSG. Erica. It was Erica or was it Ray? Okay. Whoever. Decide between you, your board members.
No. I just want to quickly respond to you and then let the German here go at you. Aubrey, I fully want the committee to engage with you and whatever group you want to bring along with you, as long as we don't have to have a hall this big to have the conversation. But I really, really am interested in getting your ideas. And I know that we as the committee need those kinds of thoughts as we go through the processes that Bertrand and I have been trying to describe of how to shape this. So perhaps we can get together offline and figure out the best mechanism way to do that.
I'm sure we're happy to talk to you anytime. I've got Erica, and then I had Bill wanted to make a comment. And then I'd like to move on to the next topics.
The German is talking. So I follow up on what Bruce said and Ray. I had very much the same question. It's not in the sense meant that, you know, I want to have the answers from you, but I think it is important at this stage where we are, because so many things are changing, so many, you know, new developments we see arising, which automatically lead to the question that certain configuration have to be redone. And new settings have to emerge. So that's why I think it is relevant to get, you know, the most top important and relevant points, you know, you actually would love to raise with us. And because otherwise we just turn around, you know, we give you some ideas, you come back with some, and then the process becomes, again, very long. So this would be very much appreciated.
Thank you. I think we're always ready to talk with you some more. Bill.
I don't.
I was just going to say that. Yeah, I spoke this morning to the fellows, and every time I do, the thing I have to spend a lot of time on is explaining to them what the hell is the difference between NCUC, NPOC, and ALAC, and why is civil society in ICANN broken up in this way, and how am I supposed to decide where to go? And what is the relative merits of this? And I spend an enormous amount of time laying out the different structures and their pros and they serve different functions and all that. And it just, at the end of the day, it is such a mind-boggling drain on our collective energies that we spent so much time constructing and tending to these structures that just divide up the non-commercial civil society space, and it blocks us from being able to concentrate on doing real serious policy work. I'm spending 30 hours a week pro bono doing crap administration as chair, and I'm tired of it. I would really like to see an evolution towards some sort of more integrated vision of the civil society space within ICANN so that people can actually spend their time doing policy work instead.
Yes, thank you. And I have to admit, since I stopped playing NCSG chair and started just doing policy work, my life has been so much better. Okay, moving on. This has been an interesting week for me, getting back into the administration of something. But anyway, to go to the next topic, which was development of an inclusive outreach strategy, scaling participation in ICANN. Remy Nwecki was going to give us the introduction to that topic. So please.
Thank you, Audrey. My name is Remy. Okay. Looking at the developmental process of ICANN in terms of inclusiveness, over the years we have come to realize that we are not seeing the new batch of faces that we expect when it comes to multi-stakeholder build-up. So I would like to find out, probably from the board, what they're doing in terms of checkmating this, because you discover over time that a group of people that keep on circulating, and if this group of people happens to move or decide to step aside, we're going to have problem in terms of structure base in carrying on the activities of some of these constituencies, just like some people have already alluded. We need to make sure that the multi-stakeholder model of ICANN is sustained and not drift away, kind of. Thank you.
Thank you. Steve, did you want? I see your finger poised on the button. Did you want to make a comment, or someone else?
I don't have an immediate reaction. Does anybody else from the board want to respond? Oh, I see. Well, it's a challenge in every part of the organization, actually, to bring in new people. And to keep each portion vital and reinvigorated. What kind of outreach efforts are taking place within these groups to bring in new people? It would be the next question that would come to my mind.
Thank you. I had Sintra, and then Bill wanted to comment.
Thank you. Sintra Sukmanan, NPOC. I think it's a two-tier question that he's asking. Not only how do we do sufficient outreach to get new people, but also how to ensure continuity. I seem to recall that that ICANN had plans of a knowledge manager or some knowledge sharing department. Is this still on the cards?
Aha. I think that idea of a knowledge manager has evolved into a somewhat different form. We have the platforms that we're building for sharing knowledge, and is there anybody from ICANN staff who's here that can speak to that? Thank you, David.
Thank you. Of course, there are a number of efforts in trying to look for a framework of outreach at ICANN. As you know, there's been a series of webinars conducted by Sally Costerton and others there. There's supposedly a session here at the ICANN meeting. I was trying to locate the exact time. And, of course, the digital platform that's soon to be announced and made available will also have an online learning component to that, which is basically, again, a canvas or a framework for which people can put in content have videos or have courses that would be useful to your various communities in trying to explain what you do or how you do it. So those are the three elements that are being formed for an outreach strategy currently under consideration here in Durban and online with the webinars we've been conducting.
Thank you. Bill?
I would just want to draw a real quick contrast. Before this meeting started, some of us were involved in the first African School on Internet Governance, ran for 3.5 days here in Durban, was organized, lead organized by the Association for Progressive Communication and NEPAD. NCUC was very closely involved in this. We had about 8 of our people as speakers, and we organized an outreach workshop within that context. We had about 40 African participants. They were very energized, very dynamic, very into the conversation, and many of them came today to our Constituency Day meeting and followed up. And we did that without any ICANN support, any ICANN money, anything, purely on our own, bottom up. Then I look at all the stuff, all the emails I have from staff about outreach and engagement strategies and so on, and the budgets and the Arthur Anderson type plans and matrices with 14 by 14 tables of variables to be taken into account and all that. And somehow there just seems to be a real gap between sort of what's going on at the community level without support and what's being done at the institutional level. And I hope that we can find a way to blend those and come to a better balance. Outreach has to really work through the community, I think. And I think that, we should be doing stuff everywhere we go around the world that is community-driven, on the ground, talking to local groups, getting meetings set up, et cetera, rather than waiting for long-developed, highly technocratic plans from the top, personally.
Thank you. Bertrand.
Just one thing in that regard. This is something that is shared actually in many of the constituencies, and I think it is something that is perfectly at the level of consciousness in the staff. At the same time that there is the large ramping up of the outreach tools and equipment and efforts, particularly towards governments and others, using the members of the community in each of the different constituencies is an important factor. I was having exactly the same discussion with people from the CCNSO earlier this morning, where, for instance, even in the preparation of the ITU plenipotentiary, they might be very good conduits to identify early on also who in the respective countries will be the person who will be attending. So that kind of thing, and leveraging the ISOC chapters, leveraging the members from the non-commercial stakeholder group, leveraging the CCNSO and the GAC members. This is a balance that has to be maintained, and so this is clearly in the minds of the engagement team, I can testify.
Thank you. Okay. Given that we only have, although we did start a bit late, but we only have about less than 18 minutes left to this. Can we go to the next slide, which I think has the next question on it, which Marie-Laurie was going to do. No. Oh, we also have the Adams from the board. Jay hadn't even seen those before. Could you put those up there again so we could see what Adams the board had for us? Because we never actually saw any items from the board before. Next slide, please, just quickly, so we can all read the board's issues.
Mystery slide.
Oh, well. Never mind. Okay, so the next article had been the next question from us had been the Article 29 Working Party letter of 6 June 2013 that says ICANN's proposed RIA violates privacy rights of European citizens, earlier engagement of data protection officials. Of course, we've already seen a response, but please.
Thank you, Avery. Before I start with the Article 29, I would just want to refer to Bill's comments about getting a question from the ICANN fellows about the difference between ICANN and between NPOC and NCUC. And we actually do get the same questions, and usually my answer is telling them, it's like having a bottle of Pepsi and a bottle of Coca-Cola in front of you, and we are Coca-Cola. That's a joke. It's just a joke. Don't get offended. Okay, Article 29. We would like to refer to the response of ICANN VP Cyrus Nemesi, sorry if I do not pronounce the name correctly, yesterday to the GAC member about the letter. And the ICANN VP said that ICANN does consider that Article 29 Working Party is an authority, but it's not a legal authority. Surely we interpret this answer as when the word legal authority is used as understood as a legal, a court order. That's the only explanation. But surely if it's not, indeed, it's a letter, the article from the statement from Article 29 is a letter. It's not a legal order, or it's not an order from a court. But we do consider that it is a legal opinion. It's a legal opinion from a European body that represents representatives of 27 national data protection authorities. Also comprises a representative from the European Data Protection Supervisor and one representative of the European Commission. So somehow this legal opinion, these statements from Article 29, we do think that it has to be based on good, solid legal grounds, and somehow ICANN should take it into account. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Erica, would you like to comment?
I don't want to comment for staffers on it, so I think Nigel shall comment on it. Just a quick point. As you rightly say, it's an opinion, and it's a quasi-legal body. It has certain legal rights, absolutely, and it depends on the topic and the way these are framed. So it is absolutely taken serious, but I want really Nigel to answer about it. Anybody who wants to have a greater insight into it, happy to talk about it later.
Yes, thank you, Nigel Hickson. Well, I can't talk for Cyrus, but as he's not here, he gave a fairly comprehensive answer to the to several other meetings earlier today. So the transcript will no doubt show his remarks. I mean, I think what he was saying to the GAC was essentially that this is an important letter coming in from the Article 29 Working Party. As you mentioned, the Article 29 Working Party was set up under the European Data Protection Directive of 1995. It's a fundamental working party made up of the 28 commissioners now that have a locus in the European Union, and it gives advice to the Commission, and it gives advice to the European Parliament. And therefore, you know, when one gets an Article 29 letter, one, you know, doesn't tear it up and throw it in the bin. It's an important letter. It's not, however, a letter from, if you like, the European Commission saying that, you know, this is a legal requirement to do A, B, and C. It's an opinion of the Article 29 Working Party that needs to be seriously looked at. And as Cyrus has explained, the ICANN will be seriously looking at it. It has it talks about the registrar agreement, and as Cyrus has said, discussions are taking place with registrars, whether they're based in Europe or whether they're based elsewhere, on the requirements of that agreement. And of course, in that agreement, the requirement to obey local laws, which in this case local laws implement in Europe the directive, have to be taken into account.
Thank you. Yes.
Without introducing any particular element on this specific topic, I'd like to make a more general comment, which is that there has to be an equal treatment when agencies, individual agencies of different countries, in a coordinated manner, give an input into ICANN. They should be treated the same if it is law enforcement agencies or data protection authorities. The fact that the Article 29 Working Party is not a formal body is the equivalent of the law enforcement agencies coming in the ICANN process to provide recommendations for incorporation in the registrar accreditation agreement. And therefore, the fact that there are independent agencies, if they have a joint position, it has to be taken into account as a valuable input, I believe.
Thank you. Marie, did you want to add more? Okay, then I guess I'll move on to the next issue. I think it feels like it remains an open issue that needs further discussion as sort of... Oh, yes, Rudy.
Yes, being a European, I think it's important that European opinions are expressed, and maybe the working party should have been to court and asked for a court order to make it explicit and show that it is not just an opinion and a suggestion, but it is really a deadlock of cross-border law that doesn't apply in certain regions and does apply in other regions. And I think that's one of the issues we are confronting with all other aspects in the Internet as it is not stopping at the border.
Thank you. Perhaps that will be the next step. Yes, Erica.
I mean, maybe just in addition, the European data retention law will be reviewed. So I think there will be, you know, a chance again for us once this is done. And the data privacy law is under review as well. So we will probably next year have a new, in the European Union, new data privacy laws, or maybe a year later, depending on how long it takes in the House. And data retention is under review as well. Like with all laws and with all international agreements, once countries or transnational regional agreements are renewed, one will have to look at it again and then we'll have to see what kind of implication arises in this case for ICANN or for any other international organization.
Thank you. Okay, Mark, you'll be the last comment on this one because we want to go on to the next topic.
I'll make it quick, but when you have two different conflicting opinions, I was just wondering what the process was to determine which one is most likely right in lack of having a court authority, that when you see one where the plain text says something that everybody can understand, that shouldn't be considered, you know, authority in itself. And I think that the preponderance of the authority is that the Article 29 Working Party is most likely the one that's true.
Thank you.
You're yes. Asking what the process is for resolving advice between two competing constituencies or groups that send us, if we hold an auction.
Thank you. Auctions do seem to be one of your favorite solutions. Okay, moving back. I'd like to ask the slides to go back to...
We actually prefer digital archery.
Excuse me?
We tend to prefer digital archery.
Yes, we noticed. Could you go back two slides, please? I wanted to get to the next one. The next issue had to do with the reconsideration issue that we had before the board on the trademark plus 50 issue. I don't know whether you've all noticed the letter or not, but we have sent forward a request for a community engagement process and have asked David Cake to sort of lead us into that subject. Thank you.
Right. Okay, so the whole history going up to the trademark plus 50 issue I don't really want to go into. We all know there's a great deal of it. But I just want to get on, specifically address the request for reconsideration that we lodged and the response we got back. I don't think we really went into the request for reconsideration with a huge amount of optimism. But what we got back was a sort of a lot worse than we were expecting, and I think generally, I think, widely considered problematic. We got a request for reconsideration that not only rejected our not only rejected our request, but also included a rationale that had a lot of clearly looked like it had been written by external counsel under instructions to give us as many, you know, as many strong reasons to say no to us as possible. It contained a lot of novel arguments that hadn't been brought up in the process before at that time, including arguments that essentially were so strong that they've sort of got reactions elsewhere in the community by people who didn't initially have much interest in the issue. For example, about the you know, claiming that they really only had to listen to GNSO advice if it was the result of a PDP, sort of claiming that we shouldn't be sort of quoting, even when the Fadi was sort of testifying to Congress, we shouldn't take that too seriously, and other sort of quite extraordinary arguments. It has since been withdrawn, the rationale, so I don't want to go into the details of, you know, I think it generally agreed that it perhaps was not good, but we were very concerned about, you know, how that happened, that we ended up with such a strong, extraordinary response, what we should be doing in order to... Well, clearly, almost all requests for reconsideration, as far as we can tell, they all always fail. Clearly, maybe the board thinks we're using the process wrongly. How should we be using it correctly? And if we are unlikely to get a sort of request for reconsideration through in this sort of situation, should there be a process that of a reconsideration of a decision that we think is mistaken? You know, what sort of reconsideration? Maybe there should be a process that does what we think a request for reconsideration should do, even if the current model does not.
Let me offer up, if I might, three thoughts. One is, of course, that the reconsideration, the rationale was reconsidered and withdrawn and rewritten. I think that's in the form of action speaking louder than words, a strong statement that there was an agreement that there was an error made in putting forth that rationale. I know that there's a lot of concern that that might happen again. I think the stronger likelihood is that it's raising the level of attention on rationales in general and on reconsideration motions in particular. And so the second thing I wanted to say is that we are, in fact, irrespective of that, or it's kind of not driven by that particular experience, but for many reasons, taking a look at the rationale and the process of writing them and what the criteria is and having a... trying to up the level, raise the quality. They're intended to be informative and not just pro forma. And so that's an ongoing activity internally. Setting that aside, the reason for your reconsideration motion was really focused on the decision rather than on... and so the rationale is sort of an additional problem that was attacked onto that. The reconsideration process is really aimed at asking, was there a process violation by board or staff? Not so much whether the wrong answer was arrived at. That's a kind of different thing. So two possible things to suggest here. One is there are other mechanisms, including the ombudsman and other avenues, depending upon what the issue is. The second is that the broad question of do we have the right mechanisms for recourse is very much part of the discussion underway within the Accountability and Transparency Review Team, the second incarnation. I know that I'm a member of that group, but I'm not driving it. I've already taken on much of that, but you should not hesitate to provide more input to that. And I would recommend, if you do so, that you can speak to the specifics of reconsideration if you want. But I think the probably more useful is to speak to the heart of the matter of you know, are you being heard? Are the right issues being taken care of? And is there a mechanism for dealing with it when you feel that the the answer came out wrong, and not just whether everybody carefully touched all the bases that in the process on their way to reaching what you think is the wrong result.
Thank you. Although I think we did send in a thing sort of saying the process that had been followed there also hadn't been correct. I had Shireen and Bertrand both.
And David wanted to follow up.
And then David. Did
I just wanted to make one follow-up comment. The our understanding that the next process sort of beyond that to challenge a decision is it would begin it's called the cooperative engagement process. I just thought I'd let you know that we are intending to follow that process and discuss that. Hopefully will form a way to discuss our problems of this specific decision with the board directly. But we are also sort of concerned with the general issue of the reconsideration process.
Okay, thank you. I had Shireen, Bertrand, Mike, and I guess Bruce. Okay, please.
I just want to echo quite a few of the points that Steve has mentioned. The bylaws clearly defines the reconsideration request in a way to prevent abuse of the system. And it says that two things. One is, has a staff action or inaction contradicted an established policy? Or two, has one or more action or inaction of the board have been taken or refused to be taken without consideration of material information? What the reconsideration request does not do, does not look at the merit of the case itself. Now, we recognize and we talk to the ATRT that there should be some form of an appeal on the merit of the case. And what happens in most circumstances is there is a misunderstanding of the reconsideration request, and people complete the reconsideration request, focus a lot on the merit of the case in many instances. I'm not saying particularly in that instance. Therefore, it doesn't pass the test because they can't prove either of these two points. Okay? In the particular case of reconsideration request, it was 13.3. We did recognize there was an error. We did recognize that also the rationale kind of stepped into some area of policy versus implementation, which wasn't welcome. And I think we accepted that, and we did correct it. But I do agree that there is somewhere a need for an appeal. I don't know if it should be in the reconsideration request itself. If it is, then it'd be endless. An avalanche of reconsideration requests is going to come from everybody who wants, and we'll never be able to cope with it. Thank you.
Thank you. As I say, we contend that the reconsideration request met those, so therefore we will have the continuing process request. Yes, Bertrand.
Shireen has raised an important point regarding, one, the scope of the reconsideration process. It is true that today it's the only recourse mechanism in the ICANN system apart from the independent review panel. And there's a tendency to suppose that it covers both, although, as he rightly said, it is supposed to cover mostly process issues. I hope that there will be a full redress mechanism that can address substantive issues. But the second point is that in the case in reconsideration 13.3, I believe that the issue at stake was an issue of process. During the discussion in the BGC preparation of the recommendation to the board, I have dissented, and I have made afterward a statement that should be published whenever the minutes come out, and I've dissented on two grounds. The first thing is, on the process matter, wherever something is policy or implementation, there is a question of parallelism of form that would require that when a decision has substantially been modified from a decision that was taken at a certain level with a certain procedure, a similar level of procedure should be adopted. In that case, the TMCH in itself, in terms of due process, was adopted through two working groups, plus a vote by the GNSO Council, plus an endorsement by the board in the adoption of the Bleaton Guidebook. And therefore, any substantive modification of this provision, which was moving from the exact match to the TMCH plus 50, should have followed the same end validation mechanisms, i.e. either go to the GNSO Council or go directly to the board for validation. But the more important thing, even if you don't follow this argument, the most important thing is that the process that was at stake is the following. Whenever the, in my view, and I know it's a dissenting opinion, in my view, whenever the GNSO has made an explicit comment that something is a policy matter, if the staff believes that it is an implementation matter, this conflict cannot be solved by one of the parties, in that case, the staff. It should have gone to the board for decision whether it was an implementation or a policy matter. It could not be decided by the staff, which was a party to the process. So this is the reason why I think this reconsideration should have been granted, but that's not the ultimate decision that was taken.
Thank you. Mike.
Yeah, I'm quite staggered by the previous intervention, but I suppose it's all right. Just to reiterate, this is not an appeal. This is not a merits discussion. This is a process discussion. Come back, and to David's last question, if you don't like it, don't ask us what we're going to do about it, because then we're going to be criticized for being top down. Tell us what you want. Tell the ATRT2 what you want. Let's get through the process, and if you truly believe in a bottom-up approach, then let's get your views through in this. Don't expect us to sit here and tell you what it's going to be. We want to hear what you want it to be.
Thank you, Mike. I had Bruce, and then I had Shireen still. And so Bruce.
Thank you, Avery. Just as a matter of interest, did you use the ombudsman process before you used the reconsideration process?
Excuse me, I didn't.
Did you use the ombudsman process?
It's complicated to know exactly.
Didn't.
We used the ombudsman at an earlier stage of this, but I don't think for this exact thing. It's hard to tell.
Yes, there was an earlier ombudsman, but that was by an individual who took the issue to the ombudsman of the illegitimacy of the process that was used.
Right, okay, fair enough. Yeah, because I'm just going to make the general comment. I'm not going to relitigate the specific case, and I actually abstained on the matter anyway. So, but to answer your more general question, which is, you know, why do these reconsideration requests fail? And I think Shireen, you know, gave the answer for that. My comment more generally, though, is you're now looking at going into an independent review, which is even narrower. So the Ombudsman's probably got the broader scope to sort of try and resolve an issue and work between two parties in a collaborative way. Reconsideration request is really very narrow. And then the Independent Review Tribunal process is even narrower again. It's basically, was there a bylaws breach? It's not even as broad as the reconsideration. So that's why I'm just saying, I think Ombudsman or those type of processes, really just a conversation with the board about what happened, how we can improve going forward, I think would be more productive than, I think you might be disappointed with the outcome otherwise. Yeah, but let's try and work on how to improve the process to make sure your input's properly heard at the time the original decisions are being made.
I think as soon as we give up on actually getting the process to have gone through correctly and this decision completed, we'll probably do that. Shireen.
I just, only for the record, I disagree with a point that Bertrand made, and he said it didn't go to the board. It did, in fact, go to the board. The dispute between staff and the GNSO was documented in the reconsideration request. It did go to the BG, the Board Governance Committee, and then went to the new GTLD Program Committee, which is fully representative of the board. So
not before.
Okay. Thank you. I have been informed that we have taken you over schedule. We never gotten to our last question, which had to do with our belief that the GAC safeguards are coming very close to constituting censorship, but that would have been a lovely conversation to have. I want to thank the board for the time you've given us, the answers, the consideration, and and we love talking to you. We could do it forever. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good folks.
Thanks. Sorry, Rudy. Me, they don't want me on the board. We tried that twice, and it didn't work.
Chair
of what? I was chair of something once.
Yeah.
Yeah.